And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Six minutes after 11 p.m. on January 3rd, 2016. My name is Carl Amari. I'm your host for the WGN Radio Theater. The woman to my right is Lisa Wolf, looking very effervescent. I say that word a lot, but you are very bubbly.
Thank you.
Very bubbly.
It as a compliment.
And you brought me some LaCroix.
Which is also bubbly.
Thank you.
Usually.
And Mike Costella, executive producer in front of me, and Dan Long, the best in the business, our producer in the booth. So here we are. It's Sunday night. It's our 40th show. Our 40th show, Lisa Wolf. Did you think you would last 40 weeks with me?
I haven't irritated you. Well, we've
enough.
Done a lot more than 40 shows together, but 40 shows here,
true.
And it's gone by very, very quickly. It really just seems like yesterday.
And we're not just here on Sundays anymore, folks. We're here Saturdays and Sundays. Hopefully, you were here last night because Lisa and I and Mike were. And Shane was here. Shane produces the show on Saturdays, Dan Long on Sundays. Two great, great, great producers. And please mark your calendar because we are here on Saturdays at 11 p.m. and Sundays at 11 p.m. We play 3 hours of classic radio both nights, so 6 hours in total. You'll get six radio shows. Tonight we're going to tune into The Fat Man, a good detective adventure created by Dashiell Hammett, the same producer and writer that created The Thin Man and Sam Spade. We'll also tune into the story of Dr. Kildare and The Weird Circle. That's our lineup here on the WGN Radio Theater. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
In the upcoming film, The Gods of Egypt, this actor stars as the god of darkness who takes over the Egyptian empire.
All right. Now, if you know this celebrity, you could win two tickets to see Spring Awakening at Marriott Theatre, Lincolnshire. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Our Celebrity Scoop celebrity played opposite Katherine Heigl in the 2009 comedy The Ugly Truth.
If you want it to work out with this guy, then you'll listen to me and you'll do exactly as I say. You've probably already done irreparable damage with your psycho-aggressive control freak phone call. It might even be too late.
All right. If you know who that actor is, call us right now, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. If you can identify that actor, you'll win two tickets to see Spring Awakening. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are back with show 40 of the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip again.
If you want it to work out with this guy, then you'll listen to me and you'll do exactly as I say. You've probably already done irreparable damage with your psycho-aggressive control freak phone call. It might even be too late.
We took a caller offline, and James from Schaumburg is the winner of two tickets to see Spring Awakening. He knew that it was Gerard Butler who was in The Ugly Truth and will be in The Gods of Egypt. Lucky for James, he will win two tickets to Spring Awakening, which is playing January 14th through the 31st at Marriott Theatre, Lincolnshire. Check it out. You can go to Ticketmaster.com or call the box office at 847-634-0200. I love Spring Awakening. It is a Tony Award-winning pop rock score. One of my favorite shows. It's going to be a winner.
Lisa likes it so much, she'll be there punching your ticket.
Oh, I'll be there. I don't know about punching the ticket, but yeah. I'll be there.
I thought that's what you did. Yeah, I mean, you wear a lot of hats.
Yes, I do.
Although Mike is the Mad Hatter. We have nicknamed
Well,
Mike.
He's mad. I don't know about a hatter.
He is. He has so many jobs. Mike Costello works at Goodman Theater. I mean, Goodman School. I mean,
Columbia.
Wait, you work. What did I say?
Goodman Theater.
I meant Columbia. You work at Columbia. He's like a teacher. He like teaches the whole
Okay, you already ruined it, Carl. Let's just get into
the show. I teach two audio classes, and I part-time manage their recording facility.
Okay, he does that. He, like, does video production. He does this radio show. I mean, the Mad Hatter over here.
Mike Estella.
I'm doing everything I can until I can't do it anymore.
Right.
Well, you got a ways to go.
Yeah. All right.
I'm having fun.
Are you guys ready for the first classic radio show for this evening?
Let's do it.
All right. Detective. We're going to start things off with a detective. Dashiell Hammett, best known for creating the hard-boiled detective Sam Spade and the husband and wife amateur detective team of Nick and Nora Charles, also known as Thin Man. He created in 1946 a detective especially for radio. He was an overweight detective. He was nicknamed the Fat Man. He was Brad Runyon was his detective name. He weighed 237 pounds, but despite his size, did pretty well with the ladies, Lisa. He was quite the ladies' man.
Some ladies like that.
You know? Jack Scott Smart, an actor who actually outweighed his character by 30 pounds in real life. He was a big boy. Starred as Runyon. And because of Hammett's communist ties, the show had trouble holding on to a sponsor. It was canceled in 1951. But good detective series. I think you're really going to like this. This is going back to the first year it was on radio, 1946. July 8th is the original broadcast date. It's called The Black Angel. It stars J. Scott Smart. And you'll hear Ed Begley in the cast. Now, you know Ed Begley Jr. His dad is in this cast. It's sustained over ABC. Let's tune this in. Part one now of The Fat Man.
Weight, 237 pounds. Fortune, danger. Who is it?
The Fat Man.
The American Broadcasting Company brings you the adventures of Dashiell Hammett's latest and most fascinating character, the Fat Man, a fast-moving criminologist who tips the scales at 237 pounds. Tonight's adventure, The Black Angel. And now, here is the Fat Man.
A fat man is not supposed to have the physical endurance and staying power of the thinner, leaner boys. When he lugs that extra weight around, he loses his wind quicker and his muscles tire faster. If you've ever made a forced march with 50 or 60 pounds of equipment on your back, you know what I mean about a fat man's extra weight. But quick thinking will save a tremendous amount of energy. And a fat man has to save his energy in my business because you need every bit of it when you're fighting with a murderer. It's funny how much you can tell about a person at a glance, especially if you've trained yourself to take in everything. I liked this guy the minute he walked in my office, and I felt sorry for him. I liked him because his eyes were honest and intelligent. He was in his late 30s, nice-looking without being handsome. His conservative, well-made clothes told me he had a commuter's ticket in his pocket and a growing bank account he'd earned himself. I felt sorry for him as he stood in front of my desk because I'd seen the same expression on the face of a soldier in Belgium when his wife wrote him she wanted a divorce. He didn't waste any time, and I knew he was telling the truth.
Mr. Runyon, my name is Atchison, John Atchison.
Sit down, Mr. Atchison.
Oh, thanks. I hope you'll understand.
I always try to. What's the trouble?
I don't like this sort of thing. I don't like anything sneaky or underhanded, but there's nothing else I can do. I can't stand it any longer. It's driving me crazy. I can't sleep. I can't eat. I walked around the block four times before I could make myself come in.
Wife trouble?
Why, yes. How did you know?
There are a lot of wives and a lot of husbands. You'd be surprised how many of them come in here.
Yes, I suppose so. I suppose it's an old story. I guess I'm a fool, but I never thought it could happen to me.
Another man?
Well, I'm not sure. Don't you see? That's the trouble. I'm not sure. I know there's something, somebody, but I've got to find out the truth. I've got to know before I lose my mind.
Have you asked your wife about it?
Oh, no, of course not. Don't you understand? I love Peggy. I love her more than anything in the world, and I've always trusted her. If I were wrong, I could never forgive myself.
Well, I understand. You want me to find out who this guy is and what's going on?
Yes. I simply want to know the truth.
Maybe hard to take.
I can take it.
Okay, Atchison. Now, tell me why you're suspicious. What's happened?
It started only 3 days ago. I came home early. Peggy was talking on the telephone, and she didn't hear me come in. I heard her say, but Angel, John mustn't know. And I was stunned. I couldn't believe my ears. And then she said, all right, I'll meet you in the same place at 9 tonight.
Did she know you'd heard her?
Oh, no. I waited a few minutes, then walked in. She seemed flustered and surprised that I was home early, but said nothing about the phone call. That night, she said she was going to see her girlfriend.
You didn't try to follow her?
Oh, no. I couldn't bring myself to that. Besides, I kept hoping that I'd been mistaken, that maybe she hadn't said that at all.
Never had any reason to suspect her before, eh?
Never.
It's just possible, Atchison, that what you heard her say on the phone might have had a different meaning from what you suspect.
Oh, but how could it?
How long have you been married?
Not quite a year.
What do you know about your wife's past?
Why, actually, I know very little about her past life. I never questioned her. She has no family, and...
Where'd you meet her?
Oh, she was the cashier in one of those dance halls, a place called the Tropical Gardens. Oh, I know what you're thinking, Runyon, but you're wrong. I used to be lonely, and, well, I went there sometimes. She wasn't like the others. We fell in love and got married.
I see. You know, it might not be another man at all, Atchison. It might be something worse.
What?
Blackmail.
Blackmail? I hadn't thought of that. That might explain...
Explain why?
The money.
What money?
The $300 that's missing from our savings account.
Say, you fat men sure know how to dance, don't you?
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing you here in the gardens before. You're a new one, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
You aren't very talkative, are you?
Not usually. Are you?
What do you mean by that? Of course I like to talk.
Well, that's swell. Maybe you can tell me something.
What?
Do you remember a girl named Peggy that used to work here? She was a cashier.
Sure I remember Peggy. Why?
Well, I'm trying to find her. I thought maybe somebody here could tell me something about her.
Hey, wait a minute, mister. Who are you trying to kid?
Nobody, sweetheart. I'm related to her. The folks think something has happened to her. I thought maybe I could find out who her friends were when she were here or if she'd had any trouble.
Boy, you kill me.
Yeah?
Yeah. You never saw Peg in your life.
What makes you think so?
Because she's sitting right over there at that table in the corner.
Oh, the girl sitting alone?
Yeah, that's Peg. There was a guy with her a minute ago, but he ain't there now. Say, what's your racket anyway?
I'm a Hollywood talent scout, sister. Here, buy yourself a new mink coat.
A talent scout?
Hello, Peggy.
What?
Don't you remember me?
Why, no. I used to meet so many men here.
Well, you didn't meet me here.
Where did I meet you?
I'm a friend of John's.
John's?
Yeah. Mind if I sit down?
Please. He'll be right back in a minute and...
Who's he?
Listen, I don't know your name, but if you're a friend of John's, you'll forget you saw me here tonight and you'll never, never tell him.
Why? Because what a husband doesn't know won't hurt him?
No. You don't understand, and I can't explain.
Are you in trouble?
Yes.
Maybe I can help you.
No, I don't think so. I don't think anyone can help me.
Well, tell me about it.
No. Not now, not here.
Where, then?
Meet me tomorrow at the Primrose Bar at 1:00.
Okay, honey, but be there. You don't show up, I'm going to have a talk with your husband.
I'll be there. But please, please, John mustn't know anything about this. He mustn't know anything at all.
Why not?
Because if he found out, he might be murdered.
Runyon?
Yeah.
Pleased to meet you, Runyon. I've heard about you. My name's Caldwell. I'm an operative from San Francisco. Maybe you've heard of me.
Not that I recall, but there's something familiar about you.
I had a bad break not long ago. I did my job too well and got my mug plastered all over a lot of newspapers. Maybe you saw my picture.
Maybe. Could be that.
It's hurt my work a lot. Too many people know me.
Fame does have its drawbacks.
Yeah.
You're a long way from home, Caldwell.
That's why I came to see you, Runyon.
Oh? Here on the job?
That's right. I've got no connections here, and I might need a little help. I thought maybe you'd like to give it to me. There might be a lot of dough in it for you.
How much is a lot?
Say, $5,000.
That is a lot of money, Caldwell.
Yeah, for $5,000, a man is a sucker to ask too many questions.
You know, that's a funny thing, Caldwell. That's exactly what I think.
We're going to get along swell.
Sure. Now, tell me about the job.
Well, about a couple of weeks ago, a guy comes into my office and makes me a proposition. It seems a pal of his disappeared with $100,000 in cash, and half of it belonged to my client. He wanted me to find his pal.
Where did the $100,000 come from?
I don't know, but let's just say it was dropped by a careless bank messenger, and these two guys found it lying in the street.
Finders keepers, hmm?
Yeah.
And now you want to shed the client and do a little finders keepers on your own?
That's the general idea. After all, the dough doesn't belong to either of them. The client's out on the coast. The climate here doesn't agree with them.
You found this client's pal, the guy with the dough?
I found him. He's here in town, registered in a hotel under a phony name.
And the money, you think he's got it with him?
I think he's got it hidden somewhere in his hotel room.
Where do I come in? And why, if there's $100,000 in it, do I only get $5,000?
A minute ago, that was a lot of money.
That was a minute ago.
It's still enough for what I want you to do. I'll do the tough part.
What's the easy part?
All you do is get this guy out of the hotel and keep him out until I can give the room a good going over and get the dough.
Oh, it does sound easy.
It's a cinch. Once I get the money out of the room, we're safe. He can't go to the police.
What about your client?
Don't worry about him.
Well, how do I know you won't cross me up?
You don't know it. You just have to trust me.
I don't like it.
You'd be a sap to pass up such an easy $5,000. I won't cross you.
Well, how do you know I won't go to the cops with this story?
What good would it do? You don't know these two guys. Besides, there's another good reason why you won't do that.
What's the other reason?
This gun in my pocket.
Oh, you play rough, hmm?
Plenty rough. Well, how about it? Is it a deal?
Okay. Count me in.
That's better. Meet me at 8 o'clock tonight at the corner of 50th and 8th Avenue.
What's the guy's name and what hotel's he in?
Do I look like a sap? I'll tell you at 8 tonight.
Okay.
I'll see you at 8 then.
Yeah. Hello?
Hello, Brad. This is O'Hara.
Yeah? What's on your mind?
Listen, Brad. You remember a gang of bank robbers operating in the Middle West a couple of years ago, led by a guy named Angel Black?
Yeah. I remember something about it. Didn't the papers call him the Black Angel?
That's right. If you remember, he was caught and sent up for life. But one member of the gang, a fellow called Snyder, was never pulled in, and the loot from a couple of bank chaps was never found.
Hey, wait a minute, O'Hara. What about this guy, Angel Black?
Well, he escaped from prison about a week ago, and we just got a tip he's somewhere in this vicinity. I want you to keep your eyes open for him.
What's he look like?
Well, he's short, heavy set, jet black hair, and
It's not black anymore, O'Hara. It's red, and he's wearing a red mustache.
What are you talking about? How do you know?
He just left my office about 2 minutes ago.
All right, that's the first portion of The Fat Man called The Black Angel. We'll get back to that in a few minutes, but first let's pay some bills. All right, we play classic radio shows here Saturday and Sunday nights right here on the legendary Radio 720 WGN. We're here 11 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning every Saturday and every Sunday, brought to you in part by Cats Pride. Make sure that you enter our contest. Send a photo of you and your kitty to catspridephoto@gmail.com, and please add your name and your city and state. Right, Mike?
And your cat's name.
Right. Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Cats Pride, comes in here once a month and gives away an entire year's supply of Cats Pride kitty litter. If you'd like to be part of this fun contest that we have going on, just send a picture of you and your kitty to catspridephoto@gmail.com. Send it in to us, and those pictures will appear where, Mike?
On Facebook, and you can find us on Facebook, WGN Radio Theater.
Thank you very much. It's time now for the conclusion to The Black Angel, starring J. Scott Smart on The Fat Man.
You're late.
Yes, I know. I'm sorry, but I had to be careful. I was afraid I might be followed.
Your husband?
No. The man I was with last night. You saw him, didn't you? He has red hair and a red mustache.
No, not last night.
But I don't understand. He saw you at my table. When you left, he walked after you. Didn't he speak to you?
No. But two and two are rapidly making four.
What do you mean?
I think your friend followed me home last night. How did you get mixed up with Angel Black, Mrs. Atchison?
You know him? You know who he is?
Yeah.
But how?
Never mind that.
No, you've got to tell me. How did you know it was the Angel? Don't you see? He's desperate. He
came to see me this morning.
What did he say? What did he want?
Made me a proposition.
Oh, you shouldn't have sat at my table last night. Don't you understand? It's a trap. He'll kill you. He'll kill John, too. That's why John mustn't know.
You still haven't told me where you come in on this business.
I used to know the guy. I was his girl. We were going to be married.
Were you one of his gang?
No. At least I never knowingly was. I didn't know the truth about him. When I found out, it was too late. He made me go with him when things got too hot. They finally got him and sent him up. I never went back home. I came here and got a job in the tropical gardens.
How did Angel find you?
I don't know. It was four nights ago. I'd gone down to the drugstore for something and was walking home. The street was dark and deserted.
Hello, Peg.
What? Who are you?
Don't you recognize me, Peggy?
Angel.
Yeah? Who else? Let me look at you.
But, Angel, you... How did you get...
Never mind that, baby. I'm out, and I've come back for
no,
you.
No, Angel, don't, please.
For 2 years, I've been waiting for this.
Let go of me.
Hey, wait a minute. What's the idea?
No, Angel. Please, don't you understand? I'm married now. I'm happy. I've tried to forget all that.
You're not forgetting anything, baby. You're leaving with me. They won't get me again. Listen, Peg, I know where the money is.
Money?
Yeah, $100,000. They never found it because that rat Snyder got away with it, but I found him. He's registered here in the city at the Gilroy Hotel under the name of Cooley. He's got the money with him in cash.
How do you know?
Word gets around, even in jail.
But the police, they'll find you.
Oh, no, they won't. That's where you're going to help me.
No. No, I told you that's all over.
Listen, and get this straight. If you like this guy you're married to, you'd better do what I say.
You wouldn't.
Wouldn't I? Now then, I need some dough to get some clothes and dye my hair. You're going to give it to me.
But...
If you want your husband to keep his health, you'll have it for me tomorrow. And don't try any funny business or you'll get it, too.
All right, I'll get you some money, but afterwards...
Afterwards, you're coming with me. After I knock off Snyder and get the dough.
Kill?
Yeah. And anybody else who gets in my way. And don't you forget it.
Next stop, Fort Celebrity School.
gave him $300. And then last night, he insisted I meet him again.
You're sure it's the Gilroy Hotel Snyder is hiding in?
Yes. What can I do? What if John finds out?
Just sit tight and play along with Angel. Agree with anything he says. Personally, I don't think you'll hear from him again.
Why not?
Because tonight he's planning to kill Snyder, get the money, and then kill me. Yeah, this is it, O'Hara. Hotel Gilroy.
Yeah, cheesy-looking dump, isn't it?
Yeah. Nevertheless, let's go in. Hey, clerk. What room is Mr. Cooley in?
510, top floor.
Is he in now?
How should I know?
Is his key in the box?
No, I guess he's in.
Come over here closer.
Yeah, what's the matter?
Look.
Oh, please.
That's right.
Listen, this is a respectable hotel. We don't want no trouble.
Neither do we. Give us the passkey.
Oh, okay. Here.
There may be some shooting upstairs. Keep everybody off the fifth floor till we come down.
Yeah, sure. Say, what's this guy Cooley done?
Never mind. Come on, O'Hara.
Right. Five. What time is it, Brad?
3:10.
The other one was to meet you at 8 tonight?
Mm-hmm.
5 hours from now.
Well, here we are. Five, 5:10. It's down this way. Get out your gun.
Don't worry.
Here it is. Easy now.
He's not in.
I don't know. Wait a second. Open up, Cooley. If you don't, we're coming in shooting. Come on.
Brad, look.
No wonder he didn't answer.
What a mess.
See if it's Cooley.
Yeah. The back of his head smashed like an egg. So Angel got here first after all.
Maybe it wasn't Angel.
Of course it was. Look at this room. He really tore it apart.
Looking for the money. I wonder if he found it.
He must have. Not much money in cash would be hard to hide. What are you going through his pockets for?
I'm looking for the key to this room. Hasn't got it on him. I wonder...
What?
Listen, O'Hara. I want you to do something, and I don't want you to ask any questions.
What is it, Brad?
Forget that we've been here.
Forget it? Are you nuts?
You've got to forget it. Only for the time being, though. I've got a hunch this business isn't over yet.
But I can't do that.
Sure you can. I'm going to lock this door and give the passkey back to the clerk downstairs. As far as he's concerned, Cooley wasn't here.
But what about the maid?
It's too late for the maid. Nobody will find this body until tomorrow morning. That is, nobody who'll care to report it. Quick, O'Hara. Over here in this doorway.
You're crazy to try and pull this alone, Brad. I shouldn't let you do it.
Now, take it easy. I know what I'm doing. Angel's no fool, and he can spot cops a mile away. If you had men planted near me, he'd never make his play. This way, I can get him for you alive.
But you said yourself he was gunning for you.
Not the way you think, O'Hara. That's why I wanted you to keep quiet about Snyder's murder.
I don't get it.
I think he's going to try and frame Snyder's murder on me.
On you?
Sure. Don't you see? It'd be a cinch. That is, it would have been if we hadn't already found the body. As long as he thinks I'm a dumb dick trying to pick up an easy $5,000, he can't miss.
Why?
He'll meet me, send me up to the room, supposedly to get Snyder out. Then he'll tip the police.
Oh, I get it.
Sure, they'd catch me there red-handed.
Yeah, but suppose the girl tips him off that you know who he is.
That's a chance I've got to take. For the time being, I'm betting she's on the level. Everything ought to go okay, unless...
Unless what?
Unless Angel didn't kill Snyder.
But you don't think...
It's a possibility. Okay, O'Hara, it's nearly 8. Stay here in this doorway. I'm going to walk down there now and meet Angel. Don't show yourself. But if we start walking, follow us and be sure he doesn't spot you.
Okay, Brad, but be careful.
Hello, Runyon.
Hey, you're right on time.
There's an alley over here. Let's walk down there.
Why the alley?
We can talk better there.
Okay. What's the deal?
You got a gun on you?
Yeah, why?
I just wondered. You might need it.
I don't like guns. That wasn't in the deal.
I know, but this Cooley's a tough baby.
Cooley?
Yeah, that's his name. Now listen. Here's what I want you to do. He's living on a little cheap hotel, the Gilroy. It's on Clover Street. His room is 510.
How do you know if he'll be there?
I don't know for sure, but he never goes out. That's why I needed help on a deal, to get him out of the room.
Oh, I get it.
You go over there and bust in his room. Got a pass key?
Sure.
Good. Don't knock, just go right in. Act tough. Tell him you're the house, Dick, that the manager wants to talk to him about his bill or something. When you get him downstairs, call him Mr. Jones. He'll say that isn't his name, you've made a mistake. Apologize and insist on buying him a drink.
It sounds simple enough, doesn't it?
Sure. In the meantime,
no, Angel!
Well, somebody's coming.
No, no, you killed him.
You fool, he isn't dead. I slugged him. It's the idea of following me.
Runyon.
Hey, come on, it's a trap.
That's what
come
I...
Come on.
Stop. Brad, are you all right?
Yeah, I think so. He slugged me when the girl...
Yeah, I saw her run down here. She must be in it with him. She came to warn him.
Yeah, they get away?
Yeah.
Come on.
Where are we going?
Back to the Gilroy Hotel.
Why?
Because I think the $100,000 is still hidden somewhere in Snyder's room.
What makes you think the killer didn't find the money?
Two things, O'Hara. In the first place, the key to the room is missing. The murderer kept it so he could get back in the room later, after the murder had been discovered and the body had been removed.
What's the other reason?
The fact that Angel was so anxious to frame the murder on me. If he'd gotten the money, he wouldn't have bothered with me.
But he came to you before he killed Snyder.
Yeah, but when he first came to me, I think he was planning to kill me in the alley.
But why?
Because he'd seen me talking to the girl the night before, and he knew I was a detective. Later, when he couldn't find the money, that he decided to frame me for Snyder's murder.
Yeah, but where is the money? The place had been torn apart. It wasn't in the room.
That's what I mean, O'Hara. Well, here we are.
All right.
Come on.
Hey, I wonder what's the matter. All the people running toward the side of the hotel.
I don't know. Oh, here comes the room clerk. What's the matter back there?
Oh, and 510 just jumped out the window. Say, aren't you
the
six?
Yeah, quick, O'Hara.
Let's go here.
Stand back. I'm from police headquarters.
Why, that's not Mr. Cooley.
No, it's Angel Black, and he's dead.
But what could have happened? Mr. Cooley murdered right in this room, and this red-headed man dead?
Never mind that. You say this red-headed guy came in with a girl about 15 minutes before you heard the crowd yelling outside?
Yeah, it may have been less than that.
And this other guy, the one who came in after them?
Well, he seemed nervous. He was nice-looking, about 35. He asked what room Mr. Cooley was in. I told him, and he went up. Several minutes later, I heard the noise outside and went out, and, well, you know the rest.
Oh, wait a minute. Who was this third guy, Brad?
Must have been Atchison, the girl's husband.
What was he doing here?
No, he must have followed his wife or Angel.
Oh, well, then it's plain enough to me, Brad.
Yeah?
Sure. Angel and the girl bump into Snyder's room. He finds the money. The girl's husband comes in. They have a fight, and Angel gets shoved out the window. The girl and her husband take the money and beat it during the confusion downstairs.
That's a good story, O'Hara. But that isn't what happened.
Well, the money's gone, and it wasn't on Angel when he was shoved out the window.
He wasn't shoved, O'Hara.
Are you trying to tell me he committed suicide?
No, it was an accident.
An accident? Are you nuts? The girl and her husband killed him for the money.
They couldn't have done that, O'Hara.
Why not?
Because the money is still where Cooley hid it.
Where?
Come over here by the window. Look, O'Hara, on that little ledge around the corner.
Well, I'll be... A briefcase.
Yeah, and it's got the money in it.
Then Angel must have been trying to reach it. You see, you can't reach it from here. You'd have to climb out onto the ledge.
Yeah.
He must have seen the briefcase and climbed out to get it. The girl saw her chance and shoved him over. We'd better get out an alarm to pull her in right away.
Now, hold it, O'Hara. The only thing that girl did was try to save her husband's life and happiness. She loved her husband, O'Hara.
But still, she must have shoved...
Look here. See how slick this ledge is? The guy slipped as he was reaching for the money.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right at that.
Sure I am. He was in a hurry, O'Hara, and he fell. And a black angel doesn't have wings.
Next week at this time, the American Broadcasting Company brings you another adventure of Dashiell Hammett's exciting new character, the Fat Man. Next week's story is called The Skull's Ballroom. And as the Fat Man says...
A ballroom is usually a gay, carefree place filled with happy, dancing couples. But this isn't true of the Skull's Ballroom. There, the couples are ghosts of the past, and the slow waltz they do is the dance of death.
Tonight's adventure of the Fat Man, played by J. Scott Smart, was produced by Charles Powers. Music was under the direction of Bernard Green. Sergeant O'Hara is played by Ed Begley. This is Gene Kirby speaking. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
All right, that's The Fat Man, a good detective adventure created by Dashiell Hammett, who created several big-time detectives, including Nick and Nora Charles, The Thin Man, and Sam Spade. This was a detective he created exclusively for radio. Jack Scott Smart played him on the radio. That was from July 8, 1946, The Black Angel. Hope you enjoyed that here on the WGN Radio Theater. Let's take a break, then we'll be back here with Lisa, Mike, and Dan. 12:07 on a Monday morning. Right, Lisa?
Right, you've got it right this time.
All right, got it right for a change. This is the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari, and we're in our second hour, which means we have more classic radio shows for you. This hour, we're going to tune into the story of Dr. Kildare, and that stars Lionel Barrymore and Lou Ayres. And then in our third hour this morning, we'll tune into The Weird Circle with Edgar Allan Poe's story, The Telltale Heart. You won't want to miss either one of these radio dramas coming up. This is show 40, right, Lisa?
Yeah.
Show 40.
Again, right again.
Very good. So far, so good. I've been right on the money.
Right.
All right, very good.
You're always right, Carl.
Thanks. With Autolite. You're always right with Autolite. Okay, so all of this great radio shows are brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
Now You See Me 2 is an upcoming caper thriller starring this actor as a magician who also happens to be a criminal mastermind.
All right, if you could name the celebrity, you're going to win two tickets to see Spring Awakening at Marriott Theatre, Lincolnshire. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a little hint. This actor is heard here playing his signature role in the Harry Potter film series.
I'm Harry Potter.
All right, that's it. That's all you get. Pretty quick, right?
Yeah, that was a short one.
You know, this is WGN Radio. We got what a key. It's quick here.
He's grown up a little bit.
We don't waste
since
any
then.
Time. Yes, he has grown up a little bit. All right, if you know who that actor is, give us a call, 312-981-7200. Win two tickets to see Spring Awakening. We'll find our winner after this short break.
We are playing Celebrity Scoop right here in the WGN Radio Theater. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
I'm Harry, Harry Potter.
And that's all you get. And we've got Mark on the line from Milwaukee. Hey, Mark.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm very excited about this.
Oh, good. Carl's laughing at me because, you know, I do really love theater, and I really promote
you
theater.
You love theater,
and
Lisa.
He does not share my passion, that's all. So yeah, I appreciate okay. that you say that. Mark,
I run a theater company in Milwaukee.
Oh, you very
do.
Good. So then he loves theater.
All right, so we share a common passion. So help me out, Mark. Tell me who we're talking about here. What celebrity is this?
My good friend, Daniel Radcliffe.
Absolutely. He is. Is he your good friend, or are you just...
I wish he were.
I'm with you on that. Well, you're a winner. Not only was he Harry Potter, you can see him in Now You See Me Too. And you are the lucky winner of two tickets to a great show, a Spring Awakening. Obviously, you know Spring Awakening. I was explaining it to Carl, but it's a terrific show. It's opening January 14th. A good, edgy rock musical. Great music. Tony Award-winning score. And you can... check them out at the box office at 847-634-0200. That's Marriott Lincolnshire box office, or go to Ticketmaster.com. I hope you love the show, Mark. Let us know what you think.
Hey, Mark, what's the name of your theater out in Milwaukee? We'll give it a little shout out.
Boulevard Theater, boulevardtheater.com. It's a 50-odd seat theater company.
Very cool, Mark. We appreciate you listening to the show. And congratulations on winning. Lisa? Very nice. Very good.
Yay, another theater supporter.
You got it. Broadway Lisa is happy. Yes, indeed. Okay, so we are going to now tune in to a good medical drama. This is based on the characters made popular by a series of MGM medical melodramas, and stories revolved around the patients and staff at Blair Memorial Hospital. Lou Ayres took the lead role of young, handsome, and skilled surgeon Dr. Kildare. And character actor Lionel Barrymore played crusty mentor figure Dr. Gillespie. This was syndicated on radio in 1950, and it provided an affected precursor to the Dr. Kildare TV series seen in the early 1960s, starring Richard Chamberlain as Dr. Kildare and Raymond Massey as Dr. Gillespie. And as I said, it was on in the movies, on radio, and on television. We have a radio broadcast for you now. This is from September 27th, 1950. It's called Dr. Conlin Quack. Let's tune this in. Here's part one of Dr. Kildare.
The story of Dr. Kildare.
Whatsoever house I enter, there will I go for the benefit of the sick. Whatsoever things I see or hear concerning the life of men, I will keep silence thereon, counting such things to be held as sacred trust. I will exercise my art solely...
The story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer brought you those famous motion pictures. Now this exciting, heartwarming series is heard on radio. Now the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres as Dr. Kildare and Lionel Barrymore as Dr. Gillespie.
Blair General Hospital, one of the great citadels of American medicine. Clump of gray-white buildings planted deep in the heart of New York, the nerve center of medical progress, where great minds and skilled hands wage man's everlasting battle against death and disease. Blair General Hospital, where life begins, where life ends, where life goes on.
Will that be all, Dr. Gillespie? Did you want to take a blood sample?
No. That's all as far as I'm concerned, Miss Verner. Any further examination, Jimmy?
No, I think we can handle the rest of it easier at the hospital. Mrs. Brady, you understand you're to be there at 9 o'clock in the morning for x-rays.
Yes, Dr. Kildare, 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Tell me something, Dr. Gillespie. Is it real bad?
Well, now...
Mrs. Brady, you're expecting a diagnosis before we've even completed our examination.
I feel so funny.
Well, we'll make some x-rays in the morning, maybe some other tests, and then we'll know a lot more about it.
It's been bothering me off and on for a year now, but it got worse about 4 months ago.
Really?
But this is the first time you've been to the clinic?
Well, I went to see Dr. Conlon for a while.
Conlon? I don't know any Dr. Conlon, Jimmy.
Oh, he's got a real nice office in the Brunswick building. Uh-huh. You know, he's the one that advertises all the time. He has that machine, whatever it's called.
Machine?
Oh, you remember Dr. Gillespie. I showed you one of his ads a few weeks ago. He uses what I think he calls an electroradonic diagnostoscope.
Oh, yeah, that one. Mm. Yeah. Mm. And what did Dr. Conlon say was wrong with you, Mrs. Brady?
Well, it's real complicated, Dr. Gillespie. It's something about the electricity. It's in my joints and my liver when it ought to be out in my fingertips.
Oh, to be sure, yeah.
Machine doesn't seem to help me much, but he said if I'd keep on, it'd just happen overnight. That's how it works.
Just like magic, huh?
He had all kinds of letters from people he's cured. I went to him regular until I couldn't afford it anymore.
By the tarnation. Jimmy, I...
Yeah, I know. You can go now if you like, Mrs. Brady.
All right, Dr. Kildare.
We'll see you in the morning at the hospital.
Thank you, Dr. Gillespie. Goodbye, nurse.
Goodbye, Mrs. Brady.
Ah, tarnation.
I know a nurse is not supposed to offer a diagnosis, but, well, it was pretty obvious, wasn't it?
Not much doubt about it, Miss Burnett.
Doesn't have a chance in 1,000.
Oh, confound it, Jimmy. Cancer can be cured. Why don't they come to us in the beginning?
In this case, you know why she didn't. Dr. Conlon and his electroradonic diagnostoscope.
Electricity in her joints.
Oh, she went to him until her savings ran out. Great. And she's not the only victim. I've seen others come into this clinic before, victims either of him or 100 other fakes just like him. Dr. Gillespie, that man ought to be stopped.
Yeah, he ought to be smashed.
And furthermore, he's going to be stopped.
Oh.
I don't know how, but I think we could do it.
Oh, confound it, Jimmy. I don't see any reason for all this falderal.
Be quiet now. I'm trying to listen to your heart.
Well, there's nothing wrong with my heart. Never has been.
Shh, quiet now.
By the tarnation. If I'd known that I was letting myself in for this, Jimmy, I would...
Well, my dear Dr. G, you were right. Your heart's perfect.
Ah, of course, it's perfect.
Diana, along with the blood pressure and pulse rate, note, general valve action, excellent. Evidence of myocardial deterioration, none.
Right, Jimmy.
3 complete physical examinations in one day. By 3 different doctors. I feel like the prize bull at the county fair.
Well, in order to make this stick, you know, we've got to document it completely right from the start.
Well, Bertolli and Mace are pretty good authorities, you know. They're only 2 of the best internists in the country.
Next to you, of course.
Oh, well, I was going to say that.
Oh, I knew you were. Well, personally, I didn't expect to find something that Dr. Mace and Dr. Bertolli missed in their examination this morning, but after all, I've known you, worked beside you for years, and that gives my diagnosis a different kind of authenticity. Oh, Diana, you can file my diagnosis report along with the other 2 now.
Yes, Jimmy.
And keep everything in the same file, x-rays, cardiogram, basal metabolism.
Mm-hmm. Ah, anybody think I was going into training to fight this Dr. Conlon?
Well, you may have to before we're through.
Now, wouldn't that be something?
Hmm?
Ladies and gentlemen, in this corner, gorgeous Gillespie.
Oh, no. Miss Burnett.
Wearing baby blue satin trunks, ballet slippers, and... good afternoon, Dr. Carew.
Well, Dr. Gillespie, what in heaven's name is wrong with you?
Nothing is wrong with me, Carew.
But someone informed me that you've been examined today by 2 different consultants. Are you ill?
I am not. And anyway, it's none of your business.
Leave.
Dr. Gillespie's merely getting ready for an ordeal, Dr. Carew.
An ordeal?
Yes, in fact, I haven't yet told him the full extent of it. His name now is Mr. Gillis, and he's going to be my father.
Your what?
My father.
Well, now, Jimmy, isn't it several years too late for me to embark on that particular career?
Oh, not at all. Why, it's never too late, Pop.
Yes, indeed, Mr. Gillis. You've certainly brought your father to the right place. We'll have him on his feet in no time at all.
Well, I'm on my feet now, Dr. Conlon.
Oh, yes. Please have a seat.
Thank you.
You see, Dad's been having this trouble for nearly a year, but I couldn't get him to go to a doctor. He has the idea they're all quacks.
And with good reason, Mr. Gillis. I recognized your father as a man of keen intelligence the minute he walked in here. And a successful businessman, too, I'll venture.
Not bad, not bad.
Well, Dad's retired now. Sold his chain of grocery stores last year.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Gentlemen, you may not believe it, but the average medical doctor is a quack.
You don't say.
Modern civilization has progressed to inconceivable heights, while medicine has stood still. Hmm. Why? Because the average doctor is blind. He refuses to make use of the greatest scientific discovery of this century.
Oh? What's that?
Electronics. Mr. Gillis, I presume you've heard of my electroradionic diagnostoscope?
Oh, yes, yes. That's the part of your ad that attracted us. I don't know much about electricity, but it sounds fantastic.
Oh, I can assure you that if some of the miracles of healing I've seen take place in this office had been performed in a time gone by, I'd have been burned at the stake.
Ah, the good old days.
Well, Dr. Conlon, Dad's trouble seems to center around his chest, with pain sometimes in his left arm.
Oh, no symptoms, please, Mr. Gillis. The machine takes care of all that. Pain in the left arm. Gentlemen, suppose we step into the electronics laboratory. This way.
Well, now, that's quite an elaborate gadget.
Gadget? Mr. Gillis, you are standing before one of the most complex mechanisms known to modern science. Sit here, please.
It looks like the electric chair.
Oh, no danger at all. The intranuclear magnetic flux is completely compensated by the spectrum balance of the... Well, I suppose that's all Greek to you.
Impressive, though.
Now, just let me adjust these high-potential diatomic electrodes.
Gee, all those dials, control knobs, tubes, coils, it's amazing.
Oh, believe me, every one of them has a purpose. Now, just relax, Mr. Gillis. You won't feel a thing.
Good luck, Dad.
So that's it.
What's it?
The protonic balance of gamma waves indicates a strong deviation in the vicinity of the heart.
You mean it's heart trouble?
Precisely.
Well, go on then. Twist a couple of knobs and cure it.
Oh, I'm afraid it's not that simple. The machine is only set now for diagnosis. You notice I'm recording the readings of all these dials. I'll have to spend several hours computing your health vibration factor. That's why the treatments are somewhat expensive.
How expensive, Dr. Conlon?
$50 apiece.
$50 apiece?
Well, after all, Mr. Gillis, your health is an important thing.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Dr. Conlon. Now, how many treatments will be necessary, do you think?
Well, that varies. Well, that's all, Mr. Gillis. 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, we'll start you down that happy road to joyous health.
Well, that's very generous of you.
Not at all, not at all. The greatest pleasure in life, gentlemen, comes from helping to alleviate human suffering. You can go out this door.
Do I pay you, Dr. Conlon?
No. Hurry at all, Mr. Gillis. Tomorrow will be fine. Good day, gentlemen.
Bye, Dr. Conlon. Thank you.
By the tarnation. Of all the phony swindles, that takes the cake.
Yeah, probably a highly effective act, though, with somebody who doesn't know better.
Ah, trouble of all things.
I was hoping he'd pick that. That's why I mentioned the pain in the left arm. By the way, Dr. Gillespie, did you by any chance notice that spot on the back of his hand?
Yes, I did. And apparently you got the same idea I did.
I wonder if he's used that machine on himself.
Well, I don't know, Jimmy, but he certainly ought to.
All right, that's the first portion of the story of Dr. Kildare. That's from September 27th, 1950. We'll get back to that in just a few minutes here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, Lisa Wolf, Mike Costella, and Dan Long, we are tuning into the story of Dr. Kildare. And in the next half of this hour, we'll tune into the conclusion. And then in our third hour, we're going to tune into a mystery, a scary, scary mystery. The Telltale Heart. You remember reading that as a kid? Kind of, it was given to me to read in school.
Did you read?
yeah, I actually did read.
Maybe just the cliff notes.
I learned how to read. Yeah.
I thought maybe you just caught a few corners.
Isn't that surprising to you?
No.
No, I actually read this story as a kid. I remember reading it and kind of being a little creeped out about it.
I like the creepy stuff.
Edgar Allan Poe.
Sure.
We're going to tune into The Weird Circle. That's in our third hour. Now, we are here every Saturday and every Sunday night, playing classic radio shows on the legendary Radio 720 WGN. We do it out of the Allstate studio here right on Michigan Avenue. And so it's kind of like a glass booth where we can see the people walking by.
Oh, there's not too many people walking by. It's awfully cold out there.
It's cold out there. Yeah, just walking from our car to the studio was pretty
was work.
Pretty scary. It was pretty chilling, I'll tell you. But it's nice, especially in the when it's nice out, people walk
by. In April, it'll be nice.
And wave to us over here. It's very nice. All right,
they're
so,
waving to me.
So they are. Well, Lisa has quite the fan base, right, Mike?
She does, absolutely.
They go right past her.
Everybody's glad that she's back.
I'm glad to be back, too. It's nice to be back.
Yeah, we are glad.
I missed you guys.
We are glad
you're
back.
Well, I missed you, Mike.
I missed you, too.
All of the classic radio shows that we play, you know, The Shadow, Jack Benny, Burns and Allen, The Whistler, all these classic radio shows are posted on our website. So if you want to go to WGNRadioTheater.com, WGNRadioTheater.com, you will scroll down and see that we list all of the shows we're playing on Saturday and Sunday nights. And these shows are picked out by you, the listener. You let us know by going to our Facebook page and posting to us. Please like us when you do. And how do they go to our Facebook page, Mike?
Well, they can hop onto Facebook, type in WGN Radio Theater, and there we are.
Oh, that's magical. I don't know how they do it.
They'll see your picture, Carl, and they'll say, oh, now I know I'm at the right place.
Right. So just post what you want to hear, and we'll play it on the WGN Radio Theater either on a Saturday or Sunday night. Okay, it is 12:30 in the morning, Monday morning here, and it's time for WGN News with Esmeralda Leon.
Are you looking for a luxury apartment complex in the northwest suburbs? Riverside Plaza, located in the heart of downtown Algonquin, may be exactly what you've been searching for. Exquisite design can be found throughout your luxury apartment. From the solid bamboo flooring to the porcelain tile bathrooms, modern kitchen, in-home washer dryer, and large veranda. You'll have full access to the club lounge with fireplace, game tables, billiards, and TV. Host a party in the event room, work out in the fitness center, and park in an indoor heated garage. Seeing is the only true way to appreciate Riverside Plaza. So call John to set your appointment at 224-268-6343. That's 224-268-6343. Or visit riversidelux.com. That's LUXE.com.
All right, Lisa Wolf, Mike Costella, Dan Long, we're here. This is the WGN Radio Theater team on Sunday nights here from 11 till 2 o'clock in the morning. And we're here also on Saturday nights, same time, same bat channel, 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. Remember that? Same bat time, same bat channel.
I do.
My favorite television show growing up, Batman. Just love it. We one time here on the WGN Radio Theater played villains in classic radio shows, Batman villains in classic radio shows. We got to do that again because we didn't have Burgess Meredith. We didn't have, I don't think Vincent Price. Maybe we had Vincent Price. I don't remember. But there was so many villains, so many amazing actors that played villains in the Batman TV series, and they appeared on classic radio shows. We'll do that again. That was a lot of fun, right?
Yeah, definitely.
At least it was for me.
We always have fun here. And you know what? There are a lot of classic radio shows still that we have yet to play here on Saturdays
definitely.
And Sundays. So we have so much to look forward to.
Is there something
to.
You want to hear, Lisa, besides Lucille Ball?
I like the Bickersons. We were just talking about that. And people have compared us to the Bickersons. Right?
Yes.
Very
bickery.
You are bickersome.
Yes. You
are bickersome like the Bickersons.
And Mike, what do you want to hear? More Johnny Dollar?
Yeah, we can do that.
More Johnny Dollar. Dan? How about you? What do you like? You like the mysteries?
Sorry, I was typing. Yeah, I'm into I like the mysteries.
Okay.
Detective stuff.
Well, we've got a nice weird circle here for you.
Yeah, coming up. Oh, very cool. All right, well, let's get back to this. It's a good medical drama starring Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore as Dr. Kildare and Dr. Gillespie. This is called Dr. Conlon Quack from September 27th, 1950. The conclusion now to the story of Dr. Kildare.
I tell you, gentlemen, when I heard about it, I simply sat down and blanched. I really did. I blanched.
All right, Carew, we heard you. You blanched. Who told you about it?
Why, Miss Park, let's just say a little bird told me.
You mean a big, long-nosed buzzard named Parker.
Oh, dear.
Well, even though you've heard what we're planning, Dr. Carew, I don't understand why you're so upset about it.
I am more than upset, Dr. Kildare. I'm utterly prostrated. By the very idea of dragging the name of Blair Hospital into a sensational newspaper story. Why, it's unthinkable.
Well, it's the best way I know of putting this Dr. Conlon out of business. Oh, sure, there are legal angles to stop him, but there are also loopholes. But when this story is printed, he can't dodge the publicity.
Publicity? Oh, I shudder to think of it.
And we'll get publicity, plenty of it, with three top diagnosticians in the country involved in it. Dr. Gillespie, Dr. Patoli, and Dr. Mason, with the name of Blair Hospital featured.
Dr. Kildare, I absolutely forbid you to go on with this scheme.
Dr. Carew, there's a Mrs. Brady upstairs in this hospital waiting to undergo surgery next week. It's very doubtful that the operation is going to help her. 4 months ago, it would have.
I fail to see just what Mrs. Brady has to do with it.
4 months ago, Mrs. Brady was being swindled by Dr. Conlon's so-called diagnostoscope. She only came to us after it was too late. She's not the only victim, nor is Conlon the only crook.
Very well, Dr. Kildare. But it's simply not our responsibility.
Well, I feel it's my responsibility.
Now, just a minute.
Carew, shut up.
Dr. Gillespie.
Jimmy and I are going ahead with this, whether you like it or not.
Oh?
But I'll tell you what we'll do.
Yes?
We'll include a paragraph in the article stating that you were opposed to the idea.
Oh, well, in that case, Oh, good heavens, no. Why, it would ruin me, Oh, dear.
You know, there's another interesting angle in this that we haven't followed up yet. Huh. Although he doesn't know it, Conlon has a well-advanced sarcoma. Unless he's treated very soon by a legitimate doctor, he won't live a year.
Right.
You know something, Jimmy?
What, sweetie?
You're a rat.
Oh, and I was hoping you wouldn't find out. Well, tell me, is it something specific or just a rat in general?
It's very specific, and if you don't know, I'm not going to tell you.
Now, what could I have done?
Good morning, Dr. Gillespie.
Morning, Miss Burner. Morning. Jimmy?
How's your heart this morning, Daddy?
Well, not too bad, sonny. Except for a few stray electromagnoprotons in the right ventricle.
What?
Our Mr. Gillis is beginning to emerge from the dark ages of medicine, that's all.
Oh, that Dr. Conlon racket.
Right.
How's the plan working out?
Okay so far. Daddy and I have another appointment with him at 10 this morning. We sat up last night until after midnight working on the newspaper release.
I know. That's what I was talking about a couple of minutes ago. Well, I'd better get to work.
Now, wait a minute. What do you mean?
Jimmy, we had a date last night.
Holy mackerel, I forgot all about it.
Yes, I know. See you later.
I never thought I'd see the day when a son of mine would treat such a beautiful girl with such a lack of consideration.
Oh, do you know, I forgot it completely. I guess I'm really in the doghouse now.
I doubt that, Jimmy. I think Diana has enough understanding to put up with your little eccentricities.
Eccentricities? Look who's talking.
Will you? I can get away with it, you know, on the grounds of senility.
I see.
I'm referred to as a grand old man by these idiots around here. Speaking of idiots.
Good morning, Doc. I mean, sir.
Wayman, what are you doing in here? You're supposed to be downstairs.
Yeah, I know. But as long as I may win $60, I took the chance.
$60? How?
Well, everybody around the hospital is saying that if Dr. Conlon finds out that you're a doctor, you follow me, Dr. Kildare?
I guess so, Wayman.
Yeah, well, they're betting if he finds out, then Dr. Conlon will use that the machine to electrocute Dr. Gillespie.
By the great horn spoon.
I'm betting he won't.
Oh.
Well, anyway, it proves your loyalty to Dr. Gillespie.
Oh, loyalty's got nothing to do with it. I'm getting 3-1 odds.
Just sit back now and relax, Mr. Gillis. Let the healing, life-giving alpha-protonic miracle rays flow through your autonomic nervous system.
Yes, indeed. That's $50 a flow.
But the reward, Mr. Gillis, freedom from sickness, abundance of energy, a 100% joy in living.
What do a few pennies matter?
Oh, you're absolutely right, Dr. Conlon. Money isn't everything. But are you entirely certain there's no danger in this treatment?
Yeah, I'd hate to have my autonomic nervous system blow out a fuse.
Oh, there's not a thing to worry about, gentlemen. Huh? Everything is compensated, and I computed the setting very carefully. You see, right now, the machine is removing the inductive microfarad excess from the heart and distributing it between the thyroid and the left kidney.
I see.
That's why it's so important to make accurate computations. We don't dare remove too many microfarads from the heart or add too many to the kidney.
Well, we certainly don't. Might start a chain reaction, and I'd just up and disintegrate.
Well, I hardly think that could happen.
Hmm.
But it would cause trouble. Well, the 5 minutes are up. That's the first treatment.
$50 for 5 minutes. What a racket.
I beg your pardon, sir?
Oh, you'll get used to father's little jokes, Dr. Connor. By the way, did you make out that diagnostic report I phoned about this morning?
Why, yes, I did. It's right here on the table. I really don't see the importance of it, though. It's the cure that counts.
Well, father has his eccentricities, you know.
Yeah, here you are.
Well, thanks.
Is it signed, Jimmy?
Diagnosis, angina pectoris and myocardial deterioration. Yes, it's signed, Dr. Gillespie.
Dr. Gillespie?
That's right. And I'm Dr. Kildare. We're both on staff with Blair Hospital.
What's the meaning of this?
And as far as you're concerned, it means you're through swindling people out of their lives and money with that phony hookup of vacuum tubes and condensers.
You can't prove anything. You're bluffing.
You think so? As you may know, Dr. Gillespie is one of the leading internists in this country. Before we came here yesterday, he was examined by two other top men and myself and pronounced physically fit, including his heart.
So what? You doctors make mistakes all the time with your medieval methods of diagnosis.
We'll let the public decide how medieval they are. Tomorrow morning, three of the city's biggest newspapers will carry a full-page feature with photostats of the diagnostic reports, including yours, cardiograms, x-rays, along with our story of the way you operate.
I'll sue you. I'll sue both of you and Blair Hospital for $1 million.
I don't think so, Mr. Conlon.
There's no law against a man making an honest living.
Honest living. Come on, Dr. Gillespie. I'm getting a little sick.
All right, Jimmy. All right. Hey, see you in jail, Conlon.
Oh, no, you won't. I'll beat it. Wait and see.
By the way, Mr. Conlon, I feel it's my duty to warn you that you're a very sick man.
What are you talking about?
That spot on your hand. It's a sarcoma.
What?
You better get the best medical attention you can find and as soon as possible.
You're crazy. You're lying.
Think what you like. You've been told. Goodbye.
Oh, dear, 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 dear. Gentlemen, I hope you're exercising due discretion in this matter.
Discretion, Guru? We've thrown it to the winds.
Dr. Gillespie.
We're referring to Conlon as a charlatan and a mountebank.
Oh, no.
Yep, yep. A liar, a swindler, a blackguard, and a crook.
Oh, good heavens. Our legal department specifically cautioned against vilification or terms of opprobrium.
Don't worry, Dr. Carew. There'll be nothing in the story but facts, and facts that can be proved. He won't get anywhere if he does file a libel suit.
Please. I shudder to contemplate even the possibility of his filing a suit. Why, at the very thought of coming face to face with that creature, I...
You blanch.
Well, I certainly quail. After all, I...
Oh, hi, Diana.
Dr. Kildare, Dr. Conlon is here to see you.
Did you say Conlon?
Yes, Dr. Guru. Oh.
Tell Conlon to come in, Miss Vernon. And then find some smelling salts for Carew. The alpha potentian of his pancreas has short-circuited across his pituitary.
Well, gentlemen, now that you've made a complete examination, are you still of the same opinion? It's still the same diagnosis?
Oh, no question about it, Conlon. It's a sarcoma.
Well, am I right in assuming it can be cured by an operation?
Surgery's out of my line. That's Kildare's field.
Yes, it can be removed by surgery, Mr. Conlon. It's not a simple operation, but done at this time, prognosis is very favorable.
Dr. Kildare, would you be willing to perform this operation in spite of your personal feelings?
I'm a doctor, and as such, I have very clear-cut responsibilities toward my patients. Under the circumstances you mentioned, you'd be a patient. It's as simple as that. Personal feelings are out of it.
How much would it cost?
I'm on staff here. You'll have to discuss cost with the business office. However, Dr. Gillespie and I have a price of our own that you'll have to meet.
What do you mean?
I'll operate in return for your signing a complete detailed confession of your swindling activities.
You must think I'm crazy. Why, with something like that, they could probably send me up.
All right, Conlon, then I suggest you find another physician. The newspaper article will still be effective even without the confession.
I've already been to two other doctors today. Neither one of them would operate. They both told me to come to you.
I can have a stenographer sent up from the office if you care to dictate it, Mr. Conlon.
All right. I know when I'm beat. I'll have it for you later this afternoon.
Good.
At least I'll have my life.
Which is more than Mrs. Brady will. Check into the hospital at 9 o'clock in the morning.
All right, thanks. Goodbye, gentlemen.
Well, Jimmy, I guess that does it.
Yes, at least it's about all we can do. From here on, it's up to the authorities.
And the public. And the public. They're the real judge and jury.
Oh, I think I can predict their verdict in this case. It's just too bad we can't smoke all the Conlins out into the open. Oh, well, you fight it where you find it. That's the best you can do.
And it's enough, Jimmy. It's enough. No matter how you look at it, life is pretty much a matter of struggling, fighting. And it will be so for a long time to come. That smooth, easy road to joyous living is still a figment of an electro-redonic dream. Come on, let's go to lunch. Well, Jimmy, getting married or going to a funeral?
Neither, as a matter of fact. I've got a date with Diana, I hope. She been here yet?
No. What's the idea? To impress her with your dazzling attire? Gorgeous raiment?
Oh, not exactly, but it does feel good to change from a white coat to a black tie once in a while, as long as it's not too often.
Where are you going?
Supper at the Starlight Room. Again, I hope.
She wasn't put out with you in the first place. I know women.
Cynic.
Good evening, Dr. Gillespie. Jimmy?
Nice.
You like it?
Mm-hmm. Love it?
Me. If I were only 20 years younger, but that's life. Well, I'm going to bed. You're going out. Have a good time.
We will.
Good night. Look, sweetie, I'm awfully sorry about last night, but we got involved in that newspaper story, and... Well, I'm just sorry, that's all.
Jimmy... You're a born crusader, and you'll never change.
Incurable, huh?
I'm afraid so. And you know something?
What?
I wouldn't want you to change.
All right, sweetie, then I'll make a confession.
What, Jimmy?
I couldn't change.
You have just heard the story of Dr. Kildare, starring Lou Ayres and Lionel Barrymore. This program was written by Les Crutchfield and directed by William P. Russo. Original music was composed and conducted by Walter Schumann. Supporting cast included Ted Osborne, Georgia Ellis, Ed Max, Sarah Selby, and Raymond Burr. Dick Joy speaking.
There you have the story of Dr. Kildare, and that's from September 27th, 1950, called Dr. Conlon Quack. And in the cast, you heard Lou Ayres as Dr. Kildare, Lionel Barrymore as Dr. Gillespie, and the supporting cast, Ted Osborne, Georgia Ellis. Georgia Ellis was saloon girl Kitty Russell on Gunsmoke, Edwin Max, Raymond Burr, who was Ironside for many, many years, and then he was, of course, Perry Mason for many, many years, and he did a lot of radio, Raymond Burr, and he was the star of Fort Laramie, did a ton of escape and suspense stories, also Sarah Selby. That was an MGM syndicated radio series. My mom tells me, you know, two favorite shows from the golden age of radio were Life with Luigi, she loved that show, and The Story of Dr. Kildare. Her and her brothers used to play the games. Dr. Kildare, you know, one of their brothers would be a doctor, and they would, you know, have patients and this and that as little kids in Chicago. And she just loves that show, and she listens to the program. Of course, she's listening right now. So hopefully, Mom, that you enjoyed reminiscing and listening to the story of Dr. Kildare. And I want to remind our listeners that this show is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride Ultimate Kitty Litter. They have
the
best kitty litter.
Fresh and Light Ultimate.
They do, the best kitty litter in the world. And Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Cat's Pride, he comes in here once a month and gives away to one of our lucky listeners an entire year's supply of Cat's Pride Kitty Litter, which is a fantastic prize, especially if you have a cat. If you don't have a cat, well, maybe not so great. But if you have a cat, you could sure use it, right?
I would think so.
Okay.
I don't have a cat.
I know Mike has a cat.
He's have a cat.
Mike's dying to win a year's supply of Cat's Pride Kitty. Sorry, buddy.
I wish I could.
You're not eligible to win. But our listeners are, and it's really simple. All you have to do is email us a picture of your cat. And if you'd like to be in the picture, we enjoy that. Send a picture of you and your cat and your cat's name and your name and email it to catspridephoto@gmail.com. Catspridephoto@gmail.com. You can enter once a month. So if you don't win at the end of January when Dan Jaffe comes in here and draws a winner, it's all random. If you send your picture in, it gets automatically entered into our contest and appears on our Facebook page, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so send a photo of you and your cat with your cat's name and your name and your city and state. Send that to catspridephoto@gmail.com, and you'll automatically be entered into the contest, and you may win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. Huh?
Yeah, it's a good prize if you got a cat.
What do you think of that?
If I had a cat, I would love that.
Well, you have a dog.
Yeah, I don't think he needs kitty litter, but,
no,
you know.
He definitely does not. All right, let's take a break, and then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, Mike, you're going to need to wake Lisa up over there. She's out. She's out cold. Third hour.
I hope they're watching.
She's sleeping away.
I hope people are watching.
You know what she's doing
you
right
snore
now?
Over
she's
there.
Dreaming about beating me at ping pong, which is never gonna happen.
Yeah, that's what I do when I dream.
She was dreaming.
When I dream about Carl.
Yeah. Well, I don't blame you. I mean,
right? I mean, you know, who doesn't dream about right. Carl? Right.
So, you're awake.
I'm with
hour.
You.
You need some coffee. Need
no,
some caffeine,
I don't
Lisa?
Drink coffee, Carl.
No,
no. I am naturally caffeinated.
Yeah. I need lots of coffee.
I know you
I'm
do.
In bed by 9:30 usually.
Yeah, I don't go to bed this early.
Mike, how about
anyways.
You? You're a late owl?
Oh, I go to bed late. I wake up late.
Really?
Yeah, that's how I like it too.
Dan, I like the serenity of the night so I can get
too.
What I need to get done without
Dan Long
being
works all kinds of crazy hours, right, Dan?
Yeah, I'm the same way. I don't really have an adjustment. Like, my body can't adjust ever, so it's just sleep whenever and then do whatever.
Really? Wow.
Take it day by day.
Man, I tell you what, if I did that, I would look even older than I am. I would look like 100 instead of 80.
He's young. They adapt quicker.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
Us old guys need their sleep.
Yeah, speak for yourself.
Right? Right, Lisa?
Right,
us old
Carl.
People?
Yeah. Put me in your category.
All right. We have a great classic radio mystery coming your way here on the legendary Radio 720 WGN in this hour. It's called The Weird Circle. It's from 1944 called The Telltale Heart, a classic story by Edgar Allan Poe. That's coming your way. But first, our Celebrity Scoop segment brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
Eddie the Eagle, a movie that I'm actually looking forward to seeing, is an upcoming sports film starring this actor as the rebellious coach of Eddie, a British ski jumper at the 1988 Calgary Winter Olympics.
All right, so the celebrity that Lisa is talking about, I'm going to give you a hint who this is, and if you can identify who it is, you'll call us at 312-981-7200 and win two tickets to see Spring Awakening at Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire. The actor that Lisa is speaking about played Jean Valjean in Les Misérables from 2012.
Who am I? Can I conceal myself forevermore?
All right, that's it.
Oh, I like it.
But our listeners are so smart. They'll know who this is.
Oh, I like it.
Give us a call, 312-981-7200. Identify that celebrity. Win two tickets to see Spring Awakening. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are back on the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
Who am I? Can I conceal myself forevermore?
I just want to keep singing for him. You cut him off so fast. We have Mary on the line from Vernon Hills. Hey, Mary.
Hi.
Hi. Who is that from Les Mis, you know?
Russell Crowe. A lot of people probably know that. I'm so happy I won. Thank you.
I'm so sorry. You know, here's the thing. Okay, the thing is, we were talking about Hugh Jackman, who plays Jean Valjean.
Yes, but we're giving her the tickets.
But we're going to give you the tickets because there seemed to be a little error there. But that's okay because we're all good here, and you are a winner. And you have won. It's okay. No, there was a little. We're all good. We're going to go past that, and we're going to say that it doesn't matter because you get to see Spring Awakening at Marriott Theater. So that's what's fantastic here. I love the show. I hope that you love the show. It has a great score, and it's running at Marriott Theater from January 14th through the 31st. And you can go to Ticketmaster.com, get tickets, or check them out at the box office at 847-634-0200. Mary, I hope you enjoy the show. It's one of my favorites.
Thanks again. I know Hugh Jackman, too.
Yeah, you know, it's the same thing.
And I also have to apologize to the first caller that I took who said Hugh Jackman, and I told him, no, it was wrong. I don't know. I pulled Russell Crowe out of thin air, I guess. I thought I read Russell Crowe.
You know what?
Russell Crowe
was Hugh Jackman. I think I might have actually put that in the file name that you were looking at, Dan.
Oh, wait
so
a
that might have
so,
been my file.
Yes, it was, so it was in the – I look at the file names, but it also said Hugh Jackman on the rundown. So
I want to understand one thing. Someone else besides me made a mistake tonight?
It wasn't me. Let's just be clear.
This is great. So I'm not the Lone Ranger here with the guy making mistakes all the time.
Just so we're clear, Hugh Jackman is going to be in Eddie the Eagle. It sounds like a great movie. And you know what? We're just going to take it as it comes. And you know, it's not a perfect radio show. And I think your friend is calling back here. But you know what?
If he does call back, I can take care of him.
You know what? We're going to give him the same prize as well. We can give him... Go ahead, Dan, and give him two tickets to Marriott Theater as well, okay?
Yeah. All right, cool.
So we're all happy. Thanks a lot, Mary, for calling in. Sorry for the confusion.
Time now for a good, scary radio show. Sound good?
Yes,
ready for this?
Please.
Okay, we're going to tune into this show called The Weird Circle. It was a mystery. It was an anthology of classic thrillers from the pens of the world's best known and respected fiction authors of the 19th century. Focus were horror and suspense stories by Edgar Allan Poe, Robert Louis Stevenson, Mary Shelley, and many others. It was produced in New York by NBC and offered in syndication. 78 total episodes were produced with some of the best supporting actors from New York, including Lawson Zerbe, Jackson Beck, Lon Clark, Maurice Tarplin, Mason Adams, to name a few. We have a terrific episode, one of the best in the series, actually. Edgar Allan Poe wrote The Telltale Heart. They dramatized it for this episode. This is a broadcast date of January 30th, 1944. Here's The Weird Circle.
Voices out of the fog, out of the night, out of the mystery of yesterday, bring back a world gone by. Listen to The Weird Circle. Out of the past, phantoms of a world gone by, speak again the immortal tale, the telltale heart.
Eight o'clock in the evening. House is quiet. Deathly quiet. My uncle and I have just finished our meager repast in the dining room. Listen. Yes, that's my uncle walking up and down overhead, pacing the floor. He senses it too, my nervousness. Every night after dinner, he leaves the dining room and goes upstairs to the second floor. where he paces up and down. And suddenly, his heart begins to beat louder and louder. You can't hear it, but I can. My nervousness has sharpened my senses. Yes, I can hear things no one else can hear. Confound my senses. Footsteps. They've stopped. Now he'll walk down the circular stairway and join me here in the parlor. And I'll have to look at him. Watch him. That eye. I've nothing against him. But his eye. That huge, distorted eye.
If the eye offends thee, pluck it out.
Pluck it out.
Tortures me at night. I lie in bed and shut my eyes. But that horrible thing peers at me, embedded in my senses. That eye glistens and shimmers. It haunts me.
Kill.
Kill.
Kill. I've nothing against him. My uncle, my only relative.
The eye.
Pluck out the eye.
The eye. The eye. He's coming, yes, now, down the stairs, sniffing as he blinks. The swollen lid covers that eye. Uncle, is that you?
Is it me? Of course it is. Who else would it be, Charles?
I don't know.
Now for a nice hour of relaxation. Will you join me in a cigar, Charles? Here, take this one of mine.
Thank you, Uncle.
Sit down here.
I'd prefer sitting back here, Uncle.
Oh, nonsense. I can't see you over there, and you can't see me. Come. Come sit over here.
I'd much prefer to stay here.
Do you dislike my company after all these years, Charles?
No, Uncle. All right, I'll join you. But
why are you staring at me like that?
The eye.
Look at the eye.
Staring at you.
Red and swollen, hideous.
A pale blue film covers it.
Kill.
Kill.
Charles?
Yes, Uncle?
Come, light up your cigar. Here's a light. Now, that's better, my boy. These cigars have a rich, fragrant aroma. A very rich, fragrant aroma. It lulls a man's nerves into a peaceful state. It leaves the mind free for contemplation, doesn't it?
Kill.
Yes, Uncle.
Kill.
Nothing like the hours spent meditatively. Oh, blasted visitors. You answered the bell, Charles.
Yes, Uncle.
I dislike being interrupted like this. It's bad for my digestion. People should know that.
Good evening, Mr. Holtz.
Well, good evening, Charles. I hope you and your uncle don't mind a nice neighborly visit.
I'm sure we don't, Mr. Holtzcombe.
I'm glad. I was all alone this evening and felt the need of a nice, friendly chat, so I dropped over. Good evening, Mr. Woodward.
Good evening, Mr. Holtzcombe. How are you this evening?
Feeling surprisingly fit. Man of my age has no right feeling so healthy. Bad for the doctor's income, but I feel like a man of 20. Just as fit physically and mentally as Charles here.
Thank you, Mr. Holtz.
Won't you join us for a little while, Mr. Holtz?
You'd love to. Yes, indeed. I'd enjoy it.
Can't be for long. I'm retiring early, but a short visit would be appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Woodward. Mind if I light up my pipe?
No, not at all, Mr. Holtzcombe. Charles, get him an ashtray before he scatters the ashes all over the carpet.
You know? Yes, Uncle. Here you are, Mr. Holtzcombe.
Thank you, Charles. Well, 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 what's this?
Well, as any idiot can plainly see, it's a knife.
Yes, a knife, Mr. Woodward. It's a strange-looking knife.
Belonged to our ancestors. Charles, what's it doing down here off the hook on the wall?
I took it down from the wall to clean it, Uncle.
Clean it? Well, old knives are supposed to look old.
Clean it.
Clean it?
I'll put it back.
No, be careful, Charles, my boy. I knew of a young man exactly your age who took a family heirloom down from the wall one night, and it will blast it if it didn't slip and cut off his right arm. Yes, took the arm clean off, right to the elbow. He was a mechanic by profession, and it ruined his career.
Be careful, Charles, in putting the knife back. You'd better stand on a chair, Charles. It's much wiser to take an ounce of prevention.
Yes, your uncle's right.
How's that, Uncle?
Well, it's not hanging straight. I like things to hang straight. It annoys me to have something crooked on the wall.
Yes, means a death in the family. One of the pictures in my house was crooked on the wall the night of my wife's death. Now, I'm not a superstitious man, mind you, but I...
There, that does it, Charles.
All right.
Now, put the chair back where you got it.
I'm not a superstitious man, mind you, but I was confounded when she died. Confounded, I tell you.
Yes, I imagine that you were confounded.
Of course, that coincidence really doesn't compare with an event which occurred to a friend of mine. His name was... very common name. What was it? Smith. Peter Smith.
Yeah, well, what about Peter Smith?
He had a picture on the wall in his home. Well, this picture sidled over on its wire, refusing to stay upright.
The picture refused?
I swear it's true, Mr. Woodward. Well, I was there, if you don't believe me. Do you know what happened?
No, I do not know what happened.
Peter Smith died that very night.
All right. What time is it, Charles?
Almost 9 o'clock, Uncle.
3 more hours. 3 more hours.
If thine eye offends thee, pluck it out.
It's 9 o'clock. It's almost my bedtime, Mr. Holskin.
Oh, don't mind me, Mr. Woodward. I was about to leave anyway. I see. Look at the knife hanging on the wall. It slipped sideways again.
So it has.
Anxious? Anxious, Charles?
The knife is anxious.
It reminds me of Peter Smith's picture. Hmm. Well, I must be on my way. Don't bother to see me to the door, Charles. I'll find my way out. Good evening, Mr. Woodward.
Good evening, Mr. Holskin. Come. Confounded, Anna. That man makes me nervous, Charles, with his stupid stories of Smith. Fix that knife, Charles.
Of course, Uncle. I'll fix it right away.
I'm tired. I'll go on up to bed now.
I'll help you up the stairs, Uncle.
Help me? Since when do I need help? Well, maybe I do, Dad.
Anything else you wanted me besides opening this window, Uncle?
No, nothing, Charles.
I'd better take this chair out of your way.
Oh, the chair isn't in my way.
In case you should awake during the night and want to get out of bed. You don't want to stumble over chairs on your way to the door.
I never awake during the night, Charles.
But you might.
Or we might. Yes, we might. We might creep in here.
I might, yes, I might. Oh, I might do anything, my boy. I also might not. Now, take the candle with you before you leave, Charles.
Of course, Uncle. I hadn't intended to leave it burning.
Of course. We'll take it with us.
Of course, of course.
Good night.
Good night.
All right, there we have the first portion of The Telltale Heart on the Weird Circle, January 30th, 1944, is original broadcast date. We'll get back to this creepy story by Edgar Allan Poe in just a few minutes here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, this is the WGN Radio Theater. If you are joining us for the very first time, welcome aboard. We are here. We've been here for about 30-plus weeks, playing classic radio shows on Sunday nights, and then we got the good news from Todd Manley that we are going to be on Saturday nights as well. So the whole gang here is here on Sundays from 11 to 2 in the morning and also on Saturdays. So both weekend nights we play classic radio. Sound good?
Sounds great. I'm glad to do it tonight.
Right, so make sure you tune in. We play these classic radio shows, all these golden age of radio shows that aired in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, all your favorites, The Shadow and Boston Blackie and Jack Benny and Gunsmoke, Dragnet, Suspense, Escape, The Whistler, Inner Sanctum, Lights Out. I can go on and on and on naming all my favorites.
You just like to talk.
The Lone Ranger, Buck Rogers in the 25th century, yours truly, Johnny Dollar, Richard Diamond, private detective. Huh?
Come on.
I can. Don't.
I know. Don't get you started.
Don't get me going here. All right. So all of those classic radio shows are available here on Saturday and Sunday nights, 11 p.m. till 2 in the morning. So please join us each Saturday and Sunday night. But right now, let's get back to the Telltale Heart on the Weird Circle.
9:30. I must be clever. I must think everything out. Very carefully.
Yes, carefully.
Must wait till midnight. Yes, till midnight. Why must I wait till midnight? Why?
That's the plan. The clever plan.
Clever.
Walk down the stairs and wait in the parlor. The room will be dark. And I'll wait. He'll be asleep by midnight.
Clever.
Then at midnight, I'll creep up the stairs with a knife. And if the eye offends me, pluck it out. It must have meant me. Of course, it's all so clear.
Clear and clever.
First thing to do is get the knife. Go into the parlor. Stand on the chair and get the knife.
Be careful, Charles.
Careful with the chair. Pull up the chair and stand on it, but be careful.
I'm always careful. Now I've the knife. What do I do next? What is the plan?
Sit and wait.
Oh, the doorbell. Could it be at this hour? This isn't part of my plan. No, not part of my plan.
Get rid of them, whoever they are. Get rid of them.
Oh, Mr. Holscombe.
Sorry to disturb you, Charles, but I left my pipe here. I looked all over my house for the blasted thing before I remembered I'd left it here.
Well, it must be in the parlor.
Don't bother yourself. I'll get it.
It's no bother.
Why, you're trembling, Charlie. Did I frighten you when I rang the bell?
Well, I wasn't expecting you.
No, not expecting you.
Expecting you.
I read of a man in the paper who died of fright when his doorbell rang. Well, just the other day I read it. Very amusing article, too. But, oh, here's the pipe. Imagine my leaving it behind.
Yes, imagine it.
Thanks again, Chuck. What's this knife doing down here again?
It slipped.
Slipped again, did it? Well. Just like the picture at Peter Smith's.
If. Let me know if anything happened. Of course.
Of course.
Of course.
Good night, Charles.
Good night, Mr. Holscombe. Now, the plan to wait for midnight, yes, for midnight.
With the clock at midnight.
Midnight. How slow time flows when we wait for midnight.
Yes, slowly. So very slowly.
Does Holscombe suspect Charles?
He knows that the knife had been moved.
Does he know it's in your hand now, Charles?
Snugly in your hand.
The plan calls for the knife to be in my hand.
Charles, your palms are moist.
Maybe the knife will slip, Charles.
It's almost midnight.
Yes, Charles. 15 seconds.
Maybe the knife will slip, Charles.
It can't slip. It belongs in my hand.
Where is the lantern, Charles?
You've got to see, you know.
I have it. It's ready.
Listen, Charles.
Listen.
Midnight. 12 midnight.
The time has come.
Yes, the time has come.
Now for the lantern. Light it. Shut the door of the lantern. No light can escape. None. None.
The lantern in one hand.
The knife in the other.
The knife.
The knife.
Listen. The house is so quiet. Yes, deathly quiet. I must walk quietly.
Listen.
Listen.
My senses sharpen. Every second makes them sharper. I can hear the rhythmic beating of the old man's heart. The beating of his heart.
Beating out his last breath.
His last breath.
His last breath. Do you know death is outside your door, Uncle? Death is waiting, Uncle. Waiting. The door of your room opens gently, Uncle. Very gently, Uncle.
Careful, the plant.
Careful, careful.
Listen. Listen. The heart. The beating of the old man's heart.
Who's there?
Stand still, Charles.
Stand still and wait. Just wait. Wait until his gleaming eye is focused on your face.
Who's in my room? Who is it? Where's my candle?
Don't answer, Charles. Don't answer.
Just wait. Wait.
Charles! Charles!
He's calling for you. Little does he know.
Charles!
Calling for you.
Calling for you.
Oh, someone's in my room. I can see the shadow across my bed. Who is it?
Let him guess and worry. Worry.
Worry.
The room is hot. Hot in heaven's name. Answer me!
Don't move a muscle. Just stand still and wait. Wait.
Wait, wait.
Oh, what is it? Who is it? Where is Charles?
Listen to his heart.
His heart. Listen to his heart.
Now it's panic. Later, it will be the forewarning of death.
Oh, somebody help me.
Now raise the lantern. Slowly, Charles.
That's it. That's it. Focus it where the eyes should be.
Then slowly open the door of the lantern and let the light shine in that eye.
Ah! If the eye offends thee, pluck it out.
The eye! No! No! Not the knife! Not the knife!
Listen to the heart beat its last beats.
He's dead. He's dead. And I'm free of that horror. Free of the eye. Of the scorpion eye. The horrible scorpion eye.
Clever, clever, Charles. Burying the body where no one will ever suspect it to be.
Clever, clever.
Yes, I am clever.
Underneath the floor of the parlor.
Underneath the floor in the parlor.
Yes, right here beneath me. I must be careful, very careful.
You are careful. Hammer the nails in straight.
The nails are important.
Very important.
One more nail, and then my job is done. One, two. Now what? Oh, yes. Pull the big upholstered chair over the grave. There. And then place the carpet just as it was in front of it.
Clever, clever.
Yes, I am clever. Very clever. The plan has worked. He's dead. He's dead. And no one knows.
No one knows?
I've cleaned up his bedroom, scrubbed it, put his clothes away. Not even a bloodstain remains to give me away.
Not one?
Not one. No trace. No trace at all.
You're positive?
Of course I'm positive.
Clever, clever, Charles.
Of course I'm clever. Today I'll tell the neighbors my uncle left for the country.
Will they believe you?
Of course they'll believe me.
Believe you.
Believe you?
And tomorrow, early tomorrow morning, I'll say I'm leaving to join my uncle in the country. It's so easy. I'll disappear. Disappear completely from the world. Forever from that eye. That huge, distorted eye.
So I dropped over to this precinct station, Inspector Gelby, and thought I'd tell you about it.
Yes, a very strange story, Mr. Holscombe. You say this old man, Mr. Woodward, has never left town for the baths before?
Not for the last 20 years, sir. I've been their neighbor for longer than that, really.
And the nephew, Charles Woodward. How did he seem this morning?
Very much the same as usual. Perhaps a trifle more chipper. Said he was looking forward to joining his uncle at the baths tomorrow.
And you're positive this scream you heard last night came from the direction of the Woodward house?
Absolutely. I was standing at my window at the time, looking out. It must have been a little past midnight. Suddenly, I saw a gleam of light from Mr. Woodward's bedroom, and then the scream.
Scream last long?
No, but I'm positive no unimportant explanation is behind the scream.
It sounds fishy enough, Mr. Holscombe. Certainly no harm in investigating it. The boy is innocent. He'll be glad enough to allow us to search his uncle's bedroom. If he's guilty, well, we'll know in good time. Yes, in very good time.
Mind if I go with you?
Not at all, not at all. Like to have you along, Holscombe. You're always welcome.
This isn't a case of idle curiosity, Inspector. It's just that I enjoy collecting these little tales of death and murder. I've made it a life hobby, and I hate to miss an opportunity. Yes, I hate to miss an opportunity.
Search the house, Inspector, if you don't believe me. My uncle's room is right at the top of these stairs.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
My uncle will be very amused by all this when I tell him.
Oh, it's not that either I nor Mr. Holscombe suspect anything, you know.
No, no, certainly not, Charlie, my boy.
Of course not. Yep, this is my uncle's room, as you no doubt know, Mr. Holscombe.
Yes, of course it is.
Search to your heart's content.
Room's in perfect order.
If I murdered my uncle mysteriously, there ought to be at least one blood stain on the bedclothes or on the floor.
Mind if I undo the bed to look at the sheets?
Well, not at all, Inspector.
Careful.
You're clever, but be careful.
The bed sheets are used, but there's certainly no sign of violence here.
Well, naturally, Inspector.
And the floors. Spotless. Your uncle must be a very neat man.
Exceedingly neat. Isn't he, Mr. Holscombe?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Well, I'm sorry we bothered you like this, sir. But you know it's better to be on the safe side.
Well, I understand perfectly, Inspector.
I'm sorry, Charles.
Perfectly all right, Mr. Holscombe. I would have done the same thing in your shoes. Won't you gentlemen join me in the parlor for a cup of tea before you leave?
Well, we'd be too much trouble.
No trouble at all, I guarantee you. No trouble at all. Here, I better close the door to Uncle's room before dust blows through from the hallway. You know my uncle's fetish. Well, I'll join you gentlemen in the parlor shortly after I fetch the tea.
A very amusing story. A very amusing story, Mr. Holscombe.
I always thought so, Inspector Gelby.
You collect stories of crime, don't you, Mr. Holscombe?
Yes, indeed. I found some prize ones in my day.
Yes, I imagine you have.
He'd enjoy your story, Charles.
Yes, he'd enjoy it.
Enjoy it.
Pass the sugar, Inspector, please.
Huh? Oh, yes, here you are.
Listen, Charles.
What is it?
Listen.
What'd you say, Charles?
Nothing.
I've a very amusing story about a woman in India. I read it in the paper the other morning just as I was eating some very fine orange marmalade.
Listen.
It's the heart, Charles. The old man's heart.
The heart. You can hear it.
No, it can't be.
What can't be? He denies the truth of my story even before I tell it.
What about the woman in India?
Can it be the beating of the old man's heart?
Well, she murdered a rich uncle of hers.
Can a man I murdered return to life?
It's getting louder and louder.
Louder and louder.
Why did she murder him?
No known motive.
They're playing with me. They're both watching me. Watching me.
Watching you. Watching you.
Well, how did she murder him?
Cut him in little pieces and hid him under the flooring in her bedroom.
Under the flooring.
Making a mockery of a living horror.
They know, Charles.
What's the matter, Charles?
Well, he looks ill.
Ill?
Ill.
Make it stop.
They're playing with you.
Playing with you.
No.
Watch him, Inspector. He's...
Fools! Don't play with me like this. You can hear it. I can see it in your faces, in your evil, grinning faces. You can hear it.
The heart. The telltale heart.
Return from death.
Admit you can hear it. It's becoming louder and louder. Louder and louder.
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 Stop it! Stop it! I admit the deed. I admit I murdered my uncle last night. Only for the love of God. Make his hideous heart stop beating.
You murdered?
Yes. Yes, I murdered him. Tear up the plank underneath his chair. Rescue the body. But stop the beating of the telltale heart.
Telltale heart.
Telltale heart.
Pages of the past, we have brought to you the story, The Telltale Heart. Bellkeeper, toll the bell. I demand that time cease. The past will return and the stories of yesterday unfold. Listen to the Weird Circle. Out of the past, phantoms of a world gone by, speak again the immortal...
Okay, there you have it. That is the Weird Circle, January 30th, 1944, The Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe. Hope you enjoyed that. The man, Nick DiGilio, just
we
walked in.
We were talking about you while ago, Nick.
Yeah.
You were.
Were your ears burning?
Were your palms scratching?
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
That means money. You have money coming if your palms
My palms haven't scratched in a very, very long time.
We were talking about you. We said you've been on the air 30 years here, and you look like you're 34 years old.
Oh, you're kind.
So you started at 4?
I did. I was 4 years old.
Did you have a little rattle with you instead of a microphone?
Yeah. Talented at a young age, huh? Yeah.
Well, I don't know about the talent part, but
just the young age part.
Just the young age part.
Nick, it's good to see you.
Good to see you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Yeah.
And hope you're listening on Saturday nights to us here. We're on Saturdays and Sundays now. We are just jacked to be here every Saturday and Sunday playing classic radio shows. And I know you're a big classic radio fan.
I am a huge fan. You played Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah.
He's my favorite writer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. We dig it, man. These mysteries they're great on radio. The mysteries, especially late at night, our show is on at night. The mysteries work really well. People can get in bed and
When I was a kid... I used to listen to, every night. I used to listen to
CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
E.G. Marshall.
Me too, buddy.
God, I love
it. I was listening to that show. We were probably listening at
the same time.
Because we're brothers from another mother.
That's exactly right.
You know, we were listening to E.G. Marshall. He was the perfect guy for it.
He was phenomenal.
He had this interesting voice and the organ music and the creaking door, right?
Yep.
The same guy that created that show also created Inner Sanctum with
creaking
door. Yeah, Hyman Brown.
Wow.
Hyman Brown,
He liked creaking doors.
He liked the creaking doors.
Well, it's scary.
He took me to dinner once years and years ago in New York. Because, I was always tracking all of these guys down and interviewing them and everything, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he finally got tired of me begging to meet him. And he lived in this unbelievable Park Avenue penthouse. And from the floor to the ceiling in every room, and it was like a 15-room apartment, okay, were Monets and Renoirs, and he was a huge, huge impressionist art collector. He had one of the biggest collections. When he passed away, he donated most of them to the Metropolitan Art Museum in New York.
Wow!
And I mean, literally, I went to the washroom, and there was a Renoir in the washroom. Of his
Who
place.
Says radio doesn't pay?
Yeah, exactly. Well, he was doing this back in
I
the,
do.
But anyway, I digress. What's on the show this
It's
morning?
Our big year-end movie wrap up. Okay. Best and worst of the year with Colin and Eric and pretty much the whole show up until my dad tells his first joke of 2016.
There you go. It's going to be a good one.